Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about podcast while driving. Now, the story of this podcast is it's fairly foul weather, and my son missed the train, so I've driven all the way up to Katoomba, and this is the drive back. So I'm going to cover a few things, just checking. I hope I'm doing the right things here. So a bit of maize coming out of Katoomba. So Katoomba's the sort of top main sort of capital, if you wanted to say, of the Blue Mountains. Blue Mountains has got a population just under 100,000, so I don't know if you've... It's a, 100,000. And something like 30,000 or 40,000in Katoomba, and it sort of goes after that, and you get about, say, 5,000 people in Glenbrook. Now, I suppose one of the things is discussion of the... Sorry, I'm just pausing here, so I'm looking at my way out here, because it's a bit of a labyrinth here, and it's hard to remember all the different places. Talking about the Einstein pendulum once again, and the construction of the pendulum itself. So the idea here is that you supply an alternating magnetic field, and I could definitely do that, and I get some when you apply a magnetic field to a magnetically responsive material, its electrons align with the magnetic field and actually add to the magnetic field. And so you have sort of magnets for free in your material. So the material has a series of magnets, and most of the magnets... each atom has a number of electrons, and the electrons generally line up spin-anti-spin, such they have very low net spin on them. Because it's like, say you've got like a whole lot of magnets in a drawer, most of them will add up or lead to not a very strong magnet because they'll align. So it's... you have one spare magnet, one spare. So if you've got 20, say in iron, 23 atoms, electrons in an iron, 22 of those will be paired, 11 north, 11 south. There'll be one which you can get to go north-south, and if it feels the electric field, it will point with the electric field, increasing the electric field where the electric field is, and as this moves away, I'm just checking here. I think I've got this right here. Sorry, it is an absolute maze. I can't describe. This is the Katoomba courthouse. All these little doodads. Look, it's like almost nothing to get out of this way. Blood oath, this is pretty amazing. Last time I came here, it was really complex. I missed a critical turn coming up, and it's not sort of stormy, but you can't see it. Tourists who come up today would be absolutely disappointed, because it's just, you may as well just go into any cloud. The clouds are pretty much the same. You get a bit sort of a feel for it's being high up, and if you know there's a canyon system opposite, it's great. So basic thing is that you... The material that you most want is a material for your pendulum. You want something which has the greatest response to external magnetic field. So it becomes the most magnetic with the smallest magnetic field. You want something where you can measure the kick. Now, one of the things, obviously, is that you can get a very powerful magnetic field, a switch, a powerful magnetic field. Now, to do that, so there's several things. The more electrons click over with magnetic field, the better it is. So if I've got various materials and I put it in a magnetic field, it's the extent to which it can gather up magnetic field lines and put it through to change it. So there's several things. There's B, which is the magnetic field you will calculate from current, and it's H is the magnetic field you will measure. So what will happen is that you will get a solenoid up, and B and H will be the same. But if you put a magnetically coercive material inside it, if you put a magnetically coercive material inside it, it will the little magnets inside the material will respond, pointing its north with the north, so it will increase the magnetic field intensity within the material. And because it's they're tiny little magnets, you'll have the south field lines continue, or the field lines continuing in a loop. And so the magnetic field will tend to cancel outside the material. And so what will look like is that this, although it's a very simple process, what it looks like is that this is gathering up magnetic field lines. And it's the ability of materials to do this. And it's the strength at which this happens, which happens. So I'm just turfing around. Now, of course, the thing that you're really looking at is the mass, material weight, the mass to coercivity, or how responsiveness, permeability, I can't pronounce it. It's a ratio. There's a ratio of how much the magnetic field goes, the permeability, the relative permeability. Okay, I'll be out here pretty soon. Alright. Okay, well, I'll be continuing this soon after this break. A bit of a ritual now. Because it's, you get out of bed and just drive your kid. Thanks a lot. I'll be with you soon to continue podcasting. So, continuing this podcast, sorry, just had a little break there on the way coming back from Katoomba. Continuing this podcast, it's the, you get so much kick for the applied magnetic field. So, that kick has to actually push a pendulum. So if you're imagining you're pushing a kid on a swing, whether you're pushing a very light kid or a very heavy kid, you've got to work out what you're doing. So it's the effect of, intuitively, it's the density of your object. Now, one of the very obvious things that comes out from this is that if you have a disc as opposed to a long rod, a disc, you use your magnetic field once and it goes through. With as a long rod, the coercivity actually sort of accelerates as a sort of a cascade reaction down them. In other words, for the same amount of energy putting in, you get a greater amount. The field gets concentrated and goes down, continues. So it's sort of like the same solenoid, you get multiple discs, so you increase the effect. Now, obviously, increasing the length of the disc increases the length of the mass, but given you've got all these other, so if you've got a perfectly weightless suspension system, it really doesn't matter what the length of your material is. But in the real world, a longer column, longer, the geometry is best. So that the longer your sample is, there's a couple of advantages to it. So there's the ratio of sample to holding mass. Oh, this is pretty bad here. So it's pretty poor visibility, and there's this big truck on the highway behind me as I'm getting on. So obviously go for rods. If you get, obviously, the lower coercivity of the material, the less responsive it's going to be. So aluminium has basically the same coercivity as air, as one. Whereas iron's up around 200. Mu metal, which is a magical mix, has a huge coercivity. So that's something that you want to get your hands on. But in terms of sort of cheaply available stuff, you've got ferrite, which has got the property that it's non-conductive. So if you you don't get losses. It's a sort of a low loss for high frequency. It's not necessarily all that good for low frequency stuff, but it's very good for high frequency stuff. So my preference has been early off to start with ferrite, and then this is the entire idea with the concept rig. You put it together and you start seeing things. So the idea of a concept demonstrator is A, to communicate, and B, to guide you on your way. So you have your concept prototype and your research, and you try and get your papers up, and then you start to get equations in on the board, and trying to solve the thing of getting high Q, which is easy to machine, and this is high Q, which is the ring down. So I think it's 4.5 times the number of rings to 50%. And I think it's Q is a half, it's critically damped. So Q of 1 is 1 ring, gives to 50%, or 4.5 rings. I really can't remember, it's 4.5. I'll have to look it up again. But there's a physics one, which is the number of rings to 1 on E, and an engineering one, which is the number of rings to... there was a square root. I'm just really trying to think. Sort of it's coming back to me. It's the number of crossings on something which is critically damped. And of course, you don't want something that's critically damped. Now, what it means is the number of links per number of oscillations you have, which says that in a system with no losses, it will oscillate forever. So you've got a loss, and the basic thing is that the angular extension, for a particular angular extension, you get a particular type of loss, a proportional amount of loss, proportional to the amount of angle that you have. Now, what in actual fact really does happen is in the worst system you build you build a really crap system, you're not going to have this Q law. You're going to have it, and I have observed this, that it's low Q for high oscillations, because it can access, when you really turn it, it can access different loss mechanisms. So essentially you've got to basically iron out as many loss mechanisms as you can. And so if your suspension bar is of multiple materials, those multiple materials will work against each other. And so if you suspend it with an optical fiber, you have to remove the cladding. Now, when you remove the cladding from an optical fiber, it becomes very brittle. So that's a bit of a no-no to come across there. Then if you use something really soft material, that soft material itself is inherently lossy. So if you use rubber, which is a damping material, it will... Now, if you use a damping rubber as your support, it's designed to critically damp. It's designed to be yielding to... it's designed to go for critical loss there. That is to respond, but also be critical loss. So... So your general loss mechanisms are the connection of your material. So if you've got a if you imagine you've got a pendulum, or a torsional pendulum, and it's just not screwed in properly, it will just rattle about and not couple to your torsion. So it's you've got a coupling loss. The torsion material has a loss with that, and we've got the intrinsic material. So my preference is to avoid the entire torsion story itself, because it's got a whole heap of coupling problems, and get something called a rotational pendulum. That is, that if you suspend something by multiple strands of string, depending on its geometry, if you design a string parallelogram, it can have these various things. It can't jump up and down because it's a string. It can swing from side to side, but in this various ways, because it's a parallelogram, if it wants to swing side to side, it will try to swing to side to side, it's really awkward. If you've got a parallelogram and a large weight, so the amazing thing is that in terms of you've got an extended weight and you push it to the side, it will still tend to try and swing, but it will be held in position for it. So this parallelogram or prismatic holding. Now, the thing is that if you have prismatic holding, it still has a mode of oscillation. That is, it can move such that it can flex. It can flex all the strings without stretching them. So ideally you need this pyramid, held by a pyramid and can oscillate that way. Now, and ideally you want to hold it in multiple positions so you can reduce the loss. And this definitely does give the highest Q of a pendulum. So I've tried to number pendulums out. And you've got the fact that the field that you can possibly produce with digital control is limited at the moment to really 2 amps, 12 volts, and it's just a matter of getting heavier DC motor controllers are out there, and on your H bridge. So I think I've got maximum power available to me, 10 amps, 24 volt power supply. I've got that one ready to go. So that's quite a significant power supply, 10 amps, about 24 volts. That's serious money going in there. And it's like 10 amps, and to get your solenoid power out, you're starting to get serious thickness, and I suppose one of the things I could ask my friends at ABB who are into transformer winding, I know the ABB transformer people, they wind up transformers. That seems to be something which is most countries still have. I'm not sure, but people tend to, most countries have their transformer windings in there. They haven't outsourced that to China quite yet. I'm just trying to think why that's so. Well, that's generally a fantastic idea. I might see if I can see if I can get along that path. So at the moment, I've really got no money to spend on this. And so if the component costs more than $12, I won't buy it. So in general, the laser that I bought here cost me $4, but in bulk, it costs 74 cents. So that's something you can buy. And in general, I bought the Arduino board for $10 and things like that. And the shield for $10. So it allows me to get in there and play and learn, but I really can't afford the big money to get, I can't imagine how you can get a two Tesla. So ultimately you want to get a field strength of two Tesla, but that's not such a, you got to work out what you're aiming for. Thing is that because of its permissivity, you get actually a much higher field actually inside your object, because it clamps down in your piece of equipment. That's how to describe it. So you've got a few design parameters going up. Now for this, there's a tension. Oh, you can get a very intense field and put it in an intense field. There's a little point. If you want to get the maximum number of wire wraps per area, yes, you wrap your wire really closely around your magnet and your iron bar. But if you're constrained by thermal issues, you can increase the diameter of what you're doing, and that drops the field down. However, you've got a large area, your magnet will still draw, your core will still draw it in, yet you get thermal cooling and you get a more uniform field. So there is this advantage of having a large solenoid with a weaker field, a weaker, more uniform field, you know. Unless your wire is actually on your pendula, but then you've got the oscillation of that pendula. How can you actually pick it up? Okay. Moving through here at the moment. So there's that aspect of trying to work out what to go through. So a long bar, and a large solenoid, a reasonable solenoid of a reasonable size so that it can cool down. And then essentially if you've got if you're driving something with 24 volts DC 10 amps, that's 240 watts of energy. So you've got to have something large enough that 240 watts can come off this this thing, no matter what your magnetic field you wind up doing. You've got to have your wire and the thing of a large enough area, surface area, height and stuff like that, that it actually works to come along. And so you actually don't lose all that much if you actually have a longer solenoid. You don't lose all that much from a very thin solenoid to a longer solenoid. A longer solenoid has a more uniform field on the inside. So a essentially your field increases in strength as you go towards the inner wall of the solenoid if it's a shorter solenoid. So you just do work out the current from the Biot-Savart law, and sorry, just concentrating on the traffic at the moment. So a thick solenoid broad across such that it can dissipate. Basically, you can design any solenoid, basically any field that you want, any wire, but as the resistance goes down, so essentially you've got 10 amps, 24 volts, the resistance that you want to have that is, what is it, 24 volts, and if I have it at 24 ohms, it's 1 amp, so it's 2.4 ohm. I want my entire solenoid to be 2.4 ohms, and as many windings as I can have for that. So you can have, you can imagine you want pretty thick, thick wire out there to get how much wire can you get for, what length of wire can you get for 2.4 ohms. And so you can imagine a fairly thick wire. 24 volts is not all that much, but even 10 amps, I don't have the actual switching ability for that. So you've got to work out all of that here. So the overall thing is that what I have easily access to is the ferrite, so that's what's going to go in. Then your iron core, you know, how does that fare? Now, really, ideally, what I'd like to do is just do a bake-off, compare one versus the other. Now, if it's got a greater mass, it's the Q won't change because of the mass, right? Your resonant frequency will drop. So if you've got a bigger mass, your resonant frequency will drop. A bigger density will drop, which is, I suppose, something there. So essentially, it's your mass versus your supports. So if your support and your mass equals, you know, if your supports equal more than your mass, it's almost so that the mass is a sort of small perturbation on the dynamics of your force, of your supports. So to try and actually get this to operate with the masses and supports. So ideally, it's just not that I don't want to experiment with metal bars. There's no convenient metal, unmagnetizable metal. So I suppose, and it's the coercivity. It's not the saturation field that you're after. It's the actual responsivity of it. So it's what is the effect? So at the moment, I'm dealing with a thousandth of the test, just a few Gauss that's coming out of these cores. That's the best I can do, And the thing is that it's no mean feat to wind up a solenoid with thick copper wire. The copper costs a lot of money, and so unless I can think of a different way of doing it, ideally a mechanical mechanism which could flip a powerful magnet would be one thing. A powerful obviously those little neodymium magnets are super powerful, and it would be nice if you could actually have a system which would flip them really quickly. But unfortunately, that flipping process is just, that's something to think of. That's a really good field. Ideally, you could, the problem is that DC, flipping your DC on your solenoid is a way of changing the magnetic field without, I can't imagine a mechanical mechanism which could just suddenly flick, change the pole of your magnetic thing. I suppose you could have a drum rotating your neodymium magnets, sort of a horseshoe magnet moving back and forth. That might be a way of doing it. I just, it's like a drum, a horseshoe neodymium magnet, such that, you'd have to have some sort of shielding between the two, the north and south poles. Gee, that would be a complex thing. So then that might be a possibility of doing it. There may be a possibility of doing this without electronics. Now, that would be interesting to see if you could actually get this coming across. You have to really, really think, because you'd be... So rather than actually getting the neodymium, super big magnet to go and rotate on a servo, you have these two neodymium magnets bridged across, so they're producing a massive north field, a massive south field, and I do have this idea in my head that you could use these. I just cannot afford. And the bizarre thing is that you have to then, with these massive neodymium magnets, compensate for a weak external magnetic field. I just can't get my head around it. So essentially, you could have these a powerful neodymium north and south, and they're motorized together so that they rotate together. So there's a strong a strong field. And I suppose, yeah, it's... and there's a sort of a C that the field goes through. I sort of can imagine a mechanical version of this. I'll just have to go and check it out, because there's no way that it's a field. You can't really. It's sort of a fairly weak field. You can tell what it is. So if you put a screwdriver in this solenoid, you can hardly feel it. You can feel it click or anything like that. You can feel it change. But this hard to actually feel the strength of this field. However, I'm thinking you can really get a much higher field between neodymium magnets. Whether it is possible to actually, it's going to be insane how on earth I can engineer that. I just cannot think. So these four neodymium magnets, top horseshoe, bottom horseshoe, rotating such that there's a strong north-south field. It's moving around. It would be really interesting to look at the strength of that field. You know, just to build one of those things, to look at the strength of the field between a concept design, and then how I can support something like it's how you can support something from the side to spin, to oscillate, and that's yet another thing to actually build something such that can rotate and spin from the inside with some sort of ability to do that. I just have to really, really concentrate on how that's done. It has to really redefine how this is done. It's something that it's got me interested. I have to really, this will totally reconfigure it. Wow. I just have to, I can sort of see how it's done. So, you can have have it lengthwise, so it's all flat. Rather than hanging down, you have it supported from the... Oh, what's happening here? Springwood. So as I'm talking to you, I'm having a different idea of possibly a different way of making it. Rather than electromagnets, which are difficult to do, this is solid magnets, and you have a bar, horizontal bar, which is supported at the top, but can actually rock as a proper pendulum. Now, gee whiz, that is an amazing reconfiguration of what's going on. While I'm talking to you, I've had a new orientation. So, at the moment, the idea of the pendulum is hanging down. This one is a pendulum held from either side, and the magnetic field is such that it actually rocks it. So you've got a pendulum, and have a weight. That is a really interesting version. So you change it from a torsion pendulum to an actual standard pendulum, but the actual weight is up at the axis, and it moves back and forth. This way, you can actually move a neodymium magnet through axially, move it, have it spinning axially, and she whiz. But then you'd have the, you'd want to do a, how to do it. You'd want to, no, there's, you can, I think it's doable. I really, really do think it's doable. You wouldn't want to mechanically do it. You want to have your separated, controlled, and that would be a very interesting thing. So you do that, and that would really get amongst the pigeons. So I'll write that one up as an alternative design. To get the field up, because there's no way that you can actually get a high field. So you can actually buy these neodymium magnets for about $6 each. These really heavy, thick neodymium magnets, and essentially, you've got to really, really think about it. Because I'm just gonna think the problem is that you can't get it switched on the full push. So you get there's a little bit of a push and what will be half a push back. I don't know whether I just have to really think of it. One of the things. This is like an alternative design for it, but I think that's really got the highest Q possible. She is. Even with the solenoid, that's probably a better bet. And of course, that's just an extraordinary, because IQ of an oscillating pendulum is extremely high. I'm just really, really trying to think about how so just to get you, at the moment, the idea is that the pendulum hangs vertically down. If you have a horizontal pendulum, it's really interesting that the thought of neodymium magnets to try and problem solve that one, I've had to move the actual orientation of the pendulum from vertical to horizontal. Now the problem is that your neodymium magnets have an on time, but a large off time in between. So your field strength increases, decreases. And it's not going to be so devastating that you longer off time. So the the thing is that I really think you can actually do it. So rather than your bar holding it, it's a bar suspended horizontally, and it's you can sort of support it, beautifully support it, and it's the high Q of it, and you lost mechanisms there. So you've got two things that and then that's again back to how it's supported. Now that's really great, because if you can support end and at the left and right end from a bar, so it's a bar going horizontally across. So it may, unfortunately, when you listen to this, may not sound as a good thing. I'd sort of like a really crazy thing, because obviously my brain's been a bit fried, but still there's some quality thoughts there. It's just, oh, I can't describe it. It's like trying to get ideas through this mesh of confusion and sort of things. It's sort of like looking at a TV screen and bits and pieces are fading of it. So, there is this alternative mechanism. I should chart it out, and that's trying to get an alternative design. So what are some of the advantages? The advantages, I suppose, one of the great advantages I've got so far is that I've got and it's sort of it's just so exposed and so nice to use. One of the advantages I've got so far is the and the sort of Earth's magnetic field is again then removed, a large section of it's removed, because you're now you're operating like at the moment horizontal. You're like, if you want your compass to be most sensitive to the magnetic field, you tend to hold your compass in your hand. If you hold it sideways, you've got all these complexities with it, so you hold it, and we've moved it into a better plane. So I've this flipped the Einstein's pendulum on its side and get it to rock, and now the big issue is loss mechanisms. I'm just really trying to think. I really don't know whether the problems I'm having thinking at the moment is because I'm getting better, getting over some of the stroke problems, or that they're coming back. It's really a bit depressing. So I can sort of see another mechanism for this Einstein pendulum. This is make it horizontal and get four powerful neodymium magnets either side to oscillate. That will create a very powerful magnetic field, and it'll be really interesting to actually just measure this as a magnetic field, to build it. One thing, I think I can do that. I can get these four neodymium bar magnets. I'm sure they'll come out cheaply from China and have stepper motors. In fact, it's actually really nothing to it in terms of with the stepper motors. If I can just piggyback, I can actually just piggyback the actual, except the stepper motors have to go up. No, you just rewire the four poles differently. So you just wire the poles in opposite directions. And so it's similar like a DC motor, stepper motor. You can wire the poles such that one goes forward, one goes reverse. Two stepper motors on either side will actually twink you two magnets together. Now, the interesting thing is that the magnets will probably it won't be difficult with two magnets or a slave, and in this instance the other thing is that your expanding field is not going to be such a problem. Now, the thing is that your stepper motors are going to what's going to happen is that you're going to have a magnetic field gradient, which will tend to pull your bar left and right. Now, that's going to be a disaster, isn't it? So the problem is the great thing is that with this, so with the mechanical thing rotating around and around, your I just Just wondering whether you need a coercive thing which will reduce. So what happens is that if I have a bar, the bar will be sucked into the stronger magnetic field. So the horizontal thing will be really interesting, but I still don't think you can really. It's sort of got some really interesting aspects to it, but I still don't think you can actually do it with the mechanical needed magnets on the outside, because as they rotate, they'll create a field gradient going in, and that field gradient will suck the magnet left and right. Now, I think there is a something that there is a way that you can actually reduce that by having it the neodymium magnet go in to your to a shaped pole piece, slide into shaped pole piece, and that shaped pole piece will tend to equal out the fields as you go in. That's getting a bit complex. However, I think the horizontal magnet held in a triangular, in a trapezium, is going to be a really interesting mechanism, and then you can just hang a weight off it. A weight, and that will tend to create a torsional. You know, you're going to look at this microscopic weight, and what's greater is that this weight will be hanging down. You can actually have that weight just in a under a microscope. So, yeah, I'm just concentrating, thinking 8:39, so, oh hell, there's not going to be parking outside there. So you've listened to me, I don't know how good this is. You can caught me actually trying to podcast, drive, and think through a problem. So I just, looking at the shape of it, I think we still have this place. But this gives us a whole heap of new things we can look at. So this is a long sample held suspended in our tube. So I can sort of imagine a crossbar holding. I can sort of reconfigure it whatsoever. So the overall problem is that I can't go anywhere until I actually build a field narrowing thing, and I can't do that because that's going to cost money. Okay, so that's a problem. So there's nothing really stopping me to, once I've got the amount of information out of a particular configuration, there's not much point staying there until we go forward. But I can imagine this configuration of hanging a rotational pendulum. So I can imagine a wire sticking out of it, a needle sticking out of it with the reflective lens, reflective coating on it, and that's sticking out of the solenoid, and I just it's really coming together. I'll have a look at it. So I don't know if you're with me. I'm just what are you doing, mate? You're gonna let me through, thanks. It's getting a bit of a traffic jam up here at Glenbrook. There's sort of, I don't know, 5,000 people, and they all seem to be driving towards my house, which is rather sad. There's a lot more traffic coming down the Great Western Highway. Full 100,000 people of going down to do various office work things, ordering in things from China, because we don't manufacture. It's sad to say, I think the Western Sydney is one of the remarkably one of the big Asian tiger economies. Oops. Oh, here we go. And it's all going here. Sorry, mate. Oops. This little bridge they've built over the highway to our house. And it's chock-a-block. And of course, I don't know how big the bridge is. And of course, this huge school buses decide to traverse it. Now, it looks like I might be home in time to actually drive my daughter to school, unless she hasn't walked to school already. Oh, I didn't think so. Yeah, so, oops, careful, I don't want to crash. It would be horrible to crash with this. So I'll have a good think about this. I think this is the entire design trying to get... adjust your research strategies to your budget and connectivity. So we'll just have a look at whether this can be done, and yeah, the effect of field gradients. If I can nut out a way of actually. Here's my daughter. Okay, thanks a lot.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.